Hey now, welcome to the Dirty Side of the Track, America's leading Formula One podcast. I'm Brian, that's Rob. He's in a hotel somewhere in the middle of nowhere, and we are coming to you on what seems to be the 4,000th off week already? I don't know.
I think the people of Boston are going to take a little bit of
is that where you are?
An annoyance at the middle of nowhere. I mean, just because we're not big, fancy Nancy Chicago.
I didn't know where you were. I didn't know.
Yeah, I am in a hotel just outside Boston. My son is at a swim meet here. So it is hotel Wi-Fi and hopefully non-echoey room at its finest. So, but, you know, not to be denied. I'm here all weekend and I thought, you know, I've got to pack the laptop and the microphone so that we can do this because we said we were going to do a season review in depth with stats and boy. I mean, I found some. I can't hold a candle to the sat man.
I had some
so
fun.
We'll get into that.
I had some
We've
fun.
Got some news and social to unpack. You know, not too many pieces, but one of them or two of them might have a decent amount of discussion on them. We've got the video vault and then, yeah, the 2023 Big Sap Stat Review Edition featuring, maybe for one time only if it goes down like a lead balloon, the quality to race swingometer invented by yours truly.
Quality to race swingometer invented by Rob J. Vale. Can't
yeah,
wait for that.
You're backing right away from it at the moment. This
can't
has
wait for that thing
to
be unveiled.
Quiz.
This would be worse than my quiz.
I don't think it is. So, anyway, should we get into the news and social stuff?
Let's do it.
Okay, right. So we've had the sprints announced for next year. Where but not what? Oh, yeah. We don't know what the update to the format is yet. So we've got six of them. China, Miami, Austria, Austin, Sao Paulo, and Qatar. So China and Miami, if China actually goes ahead, because it seems to have been there on the calendar for a while now, and we haven't had one forever. But yeah, China and Miami will have their, but they'll be first-time sprinters. They'll be sprint virgins.
I mean, I think China will go ahead. I mean, I haven't not kept up to date, but they had the zero COVID policy they removed last year. I don't know if it's come back or not. So I'm assuming
there's that other, you know, not to get too away from the F1 news, but there's that other respiratory disease going around China at the moment. So who knows if it's COVID to the sequel on its way.
Oh, Rob's Mr. Happy Fun Guy. And then, and then Miami, you know, of the two of us, I'm more down on Miami than you are. So I saw that and I said, you know, I didn't know what would have been better per se.
Don't like sprints, so announcing any sprint isn't going to make you do
but
handstands.
You know, I mean, Brazil is a great track, and they've had good sprints there. Austin, I enjoy good sprints there. Austria worked last year. Remember we set our bar very low for the Red Bull Ring, and then it jumped over it easily. So, I don't know. I'm just excited. I'll take whatever they give me, unless it's the F1 prize giving over and over again, because we'll get to that, but boy, that was bad. But yeah, Miami, I'm not as excited. China, I'm excited to see just show up on the calendar and be executed.
Yeah, in a way, I found it bizarre. Not bizarre, but we haven't had running around it for a while in those cars. So I thought maybe it needs to come back to the calendar first, see what it's like,
right,
and then decide to give it a sprint. But it's like, it's all or nothing, it seems.
We're going
like,
to action-pack China, even though we haven't been there in a while.
Yeah, oh well. But the next one, let me ask you a question on this, Brian. I came to this late and I had to put my Colombo dirty Mac on and go and do some research to try to work out the series of events here. Did you see this one as it...
Like, a little bit. You and I were both traveling this week for work before your trip to Boston. I did see some of this. I did, you know, there had been stories about the Wolf's and Toto's information on what he got on the cost cap and how he had insights early. And then they said, well, Susie works for the FIA. And then they had all this stuff. And there was a publication who I'm not going to give any credit to because they've had a series of bad stories over the years. And we don't
I'd go the opposite and say, so for people that don't know what we're talking about, because we're beating around the bush.
Well, I'm about to hit
to
it,
come
yeah.
to it. Well, go on, because you're doing your normal like 3-hour lead-in.
So there was an accusation and then a 2-day investigation. Was there any kind of insider dealing and any kind of information of confidential nature being passed from Toto to Susie, Susie to Toto? And I can only imagine it went like this.
It was so not right.
In the Wolf household. I mean, I saw the story happening, and then all the teams, right? All the teams, every team gave the same statement, wasn't us.
Well, no, yeah. So let's break it down for people that have no clue what happened.
I hate
so
the story, but okay, you go for it.
There's this trashy magazine that has been sued a number of times, apparently, for just garbage stories they put out there. So if you see a big headline come out, you're probably going to treat it with a grain of salt. So this publication puts out that a number of team principals had complained to the FIA about the potential, so not even factual, but potential confidential information being passed between the wolves. There you are as the FIA, right? What do? You go, okay, this trashy magazine that's been sued a number of times for fake stories. What should we do? Shall we investigate it internally and see if there's anything that comes from it? And if there does, then it can hit the headlines. Or shall we give this magazine attention and actually put out a statement to say that we're aware of this allegation and we're making an internal investigation with our compliance unit to blah, 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 blah. Yeah, they picked the latter. So they actually gave the story airtime and some credibility and said they were going to investigate it. And then you go to the next thing that happens is Susie Wolf comes out and puts a statement out to go, basically, what the F? Nobody at the FIA contacted the Wolves first to say that this was going to put out. It just went out onto wherever it went, Twitter, Instagram, whatever, to say they were being investigated. So Susie came out with a very definitive, pure, I haven't done anything wrong type statement. And then the internet did its thing. Things were swirling around. But yeah, in a massive kind of show of unity against the FIA, every single other team, apart from Mercedes, because obviously they'd already done their statement, came out with an identically worded statement to say, well, it wasn't us. None of our team principals went and ratted to the FIA that we were worried about the Wolves. So all nine of them came out and just went, yeah, basically, I'm Spartacus. And they all kind of... So then this sort of retraction or FIA came out and said, oh, yeah, well, you know, we've looked at it and actually, yeah, it's all fine.
In so, 2 days. No, 2 days'
two
time.
2 days. And then the world's biggest weirdness that adds on top of this is that around about the time that everyone's then looking for, Ben Sulayem to come out and maybe make a statement about this or whatever, the FIA put a statement out to say that a few days ago he fell and
had a concussion.
Banged his head and's got concussion. He's been in hospital for a few days. But then at the same time, obviously not comparing their notes with what he was doing, he's posting a video online of himself like walking through corridors, shaking people's hands and smiling, which quickly got deleted. So, oh my God, were you going to try and use that he'd banged his head and that's why he accidentally put a tweet out about investigating Susie? Where were they going to go with that?
Whole thing was dumb. This whole story was stupid. And then Toto even said at the end, we have no comment because we're in the middle of a legal proceeding, which I'm guessing is from them to the FIA and not the little two-day dally wag thing that was ridiculous. I hated the story from the beginning. I'm really getting tired of Mohammed Ben Sulayem. What happened to the story last year at the beginning of the season when he had the dumb comments about the valuation of Formula One and Formula One said, hey, bugger off, let me do my thing, and because they're separate, right? The FIA oversees many categories. And then he had these sexist comments people found. And then I made a joke on this here podcast that they were going to have more day-to-day leadership of the FIA of Formula One from Nicholas Tombassis. And I said, that sounds great. And you go, are you really excited about it? And I said, I don't have no idea who that is. And we moved on. I've never heard of Nicholas Tombassis since. I don't know who that is. All I see is Mohammed Ben Sulayem, who, and I'm not kidding, I will talk about this. He was so cringeworthy at the prize giving event. I actually stopped watching, and by stopped watching, I meant fall asleep. But it was not good. So this whole story stunk from the beginning. I hated it. It just felt like ridiculousness, and there was no good outcome, right? That's the thing. There was no like fun outcome to this story. Whereas like cost cap stuff was like exciting. Maybe someone broke the cost cap. This sucked all around.
Yes, apart from one thing. I love the fact that the teams all did stand together and put the same statement out, right? None of them kind of went silent. So any of them go silent, you're like, ooh, okay. Because people were keeping order of the ways the statements came out. At one point, it was like, Mr. Martin and someone else haven't said anything. It wasn't Red Bull for once. It wasn't Red Bull being painted the villain. They had, like, I think people had missed it because they tweeted it rather than putting on Instagram. But anyway, whatever. And then someone else was like, no, Aston have as well over on that channel over there. So, okay. Anyway, moving on to different
things. Please.
Well, this is worse for me.
Really?
I get more angry about this next story.
Really?
So they're going to apparently get rid of the Barcelona track, regardless of what you think of it, let's just call it what it is, a custom-built track for racing, for cars to go around fast and look like a racetrack and have access for fans to come to a racetrack and see cars go around a racetrack. And they're going to drop it from the calendar and replace it by Madrid, which, guess what?
Street circuit.
Oh, it's going to be another awful street track because we're now apparently Formula Street, not Formula One. It's going into one of the horrible areas of Madrid where it's just going to go around an industrial zone near an airport. So it's not even going to go in, like, have any fancy backdrops. Like, at least a saving grace in Monaco and Vegas is you've got something in the background. Here you're going to have warehouses.
Do they have a sphere?
No.
So then I'm not interested. If they don't have a sphere, then count me out.
I hate this story because it's a sign of things to come. Barcelona isn't the best track on the circuit, but it was better this year when they changed the chicane. It's a racetrack.
Yeah.
And we're just going to see more of this. Like, Twitter just went nuts and started saying, yeah, well, soon, you know, Spa will be gone and we'll be driving around. My geography's terrible. So pick a Belgian city, Brian. Go.
Yep.
Yep, we could drive around there. We'll be getting rid of Monza and driving around Milan. I've got that one nailed. And it just seems that's where the money is. It's money driving.
That's the problem.
I know it's
the money.
I hate this story because we do not need another street truck.
No, we don't.
And where they are in Madrid there, they've got lots of land. They're towards the outer edges of Madrid. You could go and put a Cota-style track on the outskirts of Madrid. And if Madrid really want to be the ones that host the Spanish Grand Prix and it's political to take it away from the Catalonians in Barcelona, whatever. But if you're going to do that move and that power play, do it at a nice custom-built, go and make the Spanish Cota, because that's how you do it.
You know what? I didn't think this was that big a deal until you kind of gave your opinion, and now I kind of agree.
I don't, have you seen the track as well?
I have. Yeah, I saw it.
Seen the roundabouts that it goes through.
Yeah. I don't like roundabouts as they are. And up where you are right now, they like to call them rotaries. When we were on vacation one year, they had a rotary ahead. And I'm like, what the heck's a rotary? I'm like, oh, it's a roundabout. And then there were like 4,000 in a row. And I wanted to just drive right over the middle of them after a while.
Right. But then the last one that I found... it wasn't even like one thing. It just sort of seemed to just people jumped on the back of it. But there's been this kind of like farewell tribute memes to George Russell's pose at the beginning of the F1 theme. He has featured, that cutout has been on so many different places. I couldn't even find my favorite ones because there was a TikTok that just mashed loads of them together, all the different places that George Russell has been in his little pose.
George has really become very meme worthy. Not just the arm thing, which I'm trying to do for YouTubers, although it doesn't fit in the picture. Not just the George Russell seems like the type of guy who would, and that took off for a while. But my favorite recent one was the driver's parade. I think it was Vegas. Maybe not. And so he's sitting on the top of the back of a car and he's got his legs kind of crossed and he's just nonchalant, just chilling. And the car drives right in front of the like, they're showing other cars, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, George Russell just appears, just chilling, just living his best life, and he just goes right across the screen, floats by, and he goes on, and that's been put in so many places. He is he's quickly becoming very meme worthy.
Yeah, it makes me look forward to surely if somebody inside F1 that isn't over 50 and a bit of a doofus will be in charge of their content and is like, when you do the new intros for the next season, we gotta do something where there's got to be something memeable in there, because it a lot of them. I mean, how many times did that whole intro get redone with different people's faces? We posted one on our TikTok of one that when Danny Rick came back and everybody's face was Danny Rick, and you've done a couple.
I did one when it dropped. I actually bailed out of a meeting when they announced it, and I went down and used a Snapchat filter to make everyone stick their tongue out or whatever it was.
That's right, yeah.
I thought that was so great. We'll do that again. But it is time for the Video Vault. And... I had a little time this week to actually catch some of the videos as opposed to last week when we didn't, but I'm going to start off with two awards, and this is your friend Brian here for you. I watched a lot of the 2023 FIA prize giving ceremony on the Formula One channel. It's over 2 hours long. It's 7 or 8 categories that they oversee, so there were a lot of awards that I wasn't super interested in. I don't even know the difference between a couple of the rallies and rally crosses, I'm just being honest. And so I'm fast-forwarding and I'm watching what I can, and it's very long, and the presenters were okay, but Mohamed Ben Sulayem is out there a lot. and they refer to him as Mr. President the whole time. Mr. President, welcome back. Mr. President, do you want to give this award? Hello, Mr. President. And he was so cringeworthy. There was no, like, if that's how he actually acts, there's like no genuine kind of spirit in this man. I couldn't explain it. It's very hard to watch. And I did fall asleep. And then the one I did catch, though, the 2023 Autosport Awards.
You move on to that one.
Yeah.
So I watched a bit of this as well. And I really consumed it via Twitter, kept tweeting out like 30 second to a
clips,
minute
yeah.
category of his Lewis getting his Oscar getting his. So to consume it like that was a lot better than sitting through 2 hours of it, because I could pick what I wanted to watch. But it was when he gave the trophy to Max. And this gave me a little insight into the man, is that he wanted to be part of all the photos. Like
yes.
You see how he almost wouldn't let go of the trophy when Max was trying to take it. He kept pulling it back towards him. So like, no, the two of us are going to stand and have our picture taken with the trophy. And Max is kind of like, no, it's my trophy and I'm going to take a picture with the trophy. And eventually he kind of relented and let go of the trophy and he could go off and have his pictures taken. But
I thought it was cool. Drama. In the they did a karting one and Max like basically talked to the karting recipients and I thought that was so cool. Like I mean, I enjoyed the whole thing except for Mr. President and his role in it. But then on the Sky Sports Channel, the 2023 Autosport Awards featuring Lando Norris, Max Verstappen, Oscar Piastri, and more, 47 minutes. I enjoyed this one more. This had one of the presenters I knew of, and she was great, and both of them were. They were trying to make this fast, and they edited the crap out of it. So basically, they would give an award, and they'd start reading the next award while, like, Christian Horner's still on the stage walking off. There was no, like, pausing or anything. They're like, get out of the way, and they just kept moving. Good pace, 47 minutes, and I would recommend that one. But I do have a quick soapbox to get on, kind of Rob Vail-ish for a second. And we talked about this a little bit last week when we said we'd confirmed 24 will have the same lineup as the end of 23 for the first time ever, which meant no rookies. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in the stats. But I looked at it, and when they gave, back to the prize giving, when they gave Théo Pourchaire his F2 trophy, I thought about it a little, and I'm like, this kind of sucks that we're not seeing any rookies coming in this year, and that we've had a backlog of people who haven't had seats. We've kind of recycled people to some extent. So since GP2 became F2 in 2017, the drivers who've won the championship have been Charles Leclerc, George Russell, Nick DeVries, Mick Schumacher, Oscar Piastri, Felipe Drugovic, and Théo Pourchaire, the last two who have not seen an F1 car other than testing. Two guys of the seven, who we don't really know yet, but who the other five of the seven we know very well. So there's talent that comes up through F2, and when they win, they have to be out of the category for 2 years. So they can't come back the next year or the year after. They could hypothetically come back, you know, a handful of years later. But then there's even another award that I did a little more research on, the Antoine Hubert Award, which obviously Antoine Hubert passed in 2019 at Spa. It's named after him. It's basically the rookie award or newcomer for the F2 series. Listen to these drivers. It started in 19. Joe Guan Yu, Yuki Tsunoda, Oscar Piastri. And then in 22, once again, we run into a bottleneck of drivers who have never sniffed an F1 seat. Ayumi Iwasa and Victor Martins. Victor was good this year in F2. I saw a lot about him. Highlights and things. I struggle with the fact that we have a category of the people right below F1 who are doing great, and there's a history of greatness in there, and they don't even sniff a seat. And the same as you and I talked about for the Academy. So, like, yeah, I get it, and I don't get it.
I don't. I mean, you can't have... Otherwise, what you're going to say is every year, the drivers that you like that are older have to lose their seats because there isn't an infinite number of seats.
We need relegation. Right, for... We need relegation of drivers, not teams.
I don't think it's... Look, there will be natural ebbs and flows. And when you hit a run of years where you get like insanely talented drivers like that, then a lot of them obviously that you've just named have moved up and taken seats. But it's not an infinite number of seats that can get taken.
Right.
So what I think is the other way around is that, is it to allow the other, to keep the youngsters coming through that you're not allowed to go back to the category? Because I find that if you win F2, then if you haven't got that seat because of circumstance and there isn't just an open seat, where do you go?
Well, that's because we talked about this last week.
You've got to go to say some of them are going to the endurance championship. It's not open wheeled. It's not the same type of. I don't know if you're good enough, you could come and do Indy. I don't know. And that's the shame for me is that these young kids are going to kind of tread water for a couple of years and hope that there's an F1 seat opens up.
Last thing on this, so we can close the vault. I'll just say you and I both agreed, right, that we anticipate a big silly season in 24. I'd like to add to that. I actually think this will be where the relief valve for young drivers happens, and let me explain why. The new regs come in 26. By the midpoint of this year, 24, some teams will know whether or not their car for 25 is any good. Some teams will bail out on 25 completely and start developing 26 when they're allowed, when that cutoff happens. So there may be some seasons, some 25 seasons on certain teams where it's like, you know what, let's just see what else is out there. And I could definitely see people using it as a test year for rookies so that they have the best 26 lineup they can have. And I could definitely see a lot of rookies coming through in 25. So again, I'm a year and a half out, but I'm just saying, I think 24 will have a silly season starting in the summer. And some of the names we might see for 25 would be rookies. My guess.
Yeah, that makes sense. Find in the vault then before we slam the door shut.
The racing order with Fernando Alonso and Jessica Hawkins on the Aston Martin channel. It's under 2 minutes. This is fun. Check it out. Good quizzes. It's quizzes that they have the two of them competing in. Hi YouTube. That's the whole name of the video. It's on the Liam Lawson channel. He launched his own channel. It's about 12 minutes long. Kind of boring. I wanted to like it. Everyone said it was great. I tuned in. I started falling asleep. It's a lot of him driving around, and then he works out with his shirt off. So if you're into Liam Lawson and you're looking for a thirst trap, check out the Hi YouTube video. And finally, Formula One drivers drive RC cars. Featuring Max, Checo, and Danny Ric on the Red Bull channel. It's nearly 5 minutes long. This was the video to watch. I loved it. The three of them driving RC cars around a track, I think in America. I'm guessing they filmed it after, who knows when, either after Vegas or Texas. But it was really good. I enjoyed it. And I am always curious, because it was in season when they film it, why do they put Danny Ric in the Red Bull gear and have him sitting next to Max and Checo? Where's Yuki? Like, I don't understand why they give Danny Ric this special dispensation. Like, you were once Red Bull, come back.
I wonder why.
Yeah, exactly. And with that, we shall close the video vault. All right. So what's today, Rob Sapp Stats Day?
It certainly is.
Should we open it up? Do you have anything you want to say before we get going?
No, you're now teasing it as if you've got like an amazing new Sapstat intro music piece, but you haven't, have you?
No, just Slap House, which is the best. Save Slap House. Sapstats. Special edition. Sapstats edition for the whole season. And you're right, we should probably get a Sapstats in there too. We'll do a short one here. That's awesome.
If anybody wants... Sapstats! No, what I was going to say, if somebody wants to take the Slap House... and add some kind of sap stat at the end for us so that we don't have to listen to Brian do it each time. Because the Slap House warrants its own...
Slap House so good.
Its own Slap House, basically, yeah.
All right, so we got to start with where we've been a lot. Max Verstappen. He is unbelievable. We've talked about it throughout the whole season. Max, amazingly... won 86.4% of all the races. I know we've beaten that one to death. We'll talk a little bit more about it. But he had 92% of the maximum amount of points a racer could get in the season. He had so many awards. Most wins in a season, 19. Most podiums in a season, 21. Most points in a season, 575. And we've talked about the relative points challenges over history based on number of races and the way points were scored. Most laps led in a season, 1,003. Highest percentage in a season, I just mentioned, 86.4, which we took from Ascari, I think, in the 52 season. Highest number percentage of laps led. He led 75% of the laps.
My gosh.
3 out of 4 laps, Max was leading. He had the most consecutive wins, 10. Most wins from pole in a season, 12. And he also had some from Charles's poles, sorry. Most consecutive wins from pole overall, 16. Biggest points gap between first and second, 290. We already joked about that 2 weeks ago. He doubled up on Checo. Most consecutive races as a championship leader. This is beyond a season, but 39 races now in a row. He's been the championship leader. Most consecutive points scored. 1,004. I mean, this is crazy. Most consecutive top two finishes, 15 hat tricks. So this one I know we referenced but didn't have the final number for. It's 6 in a season. Most pit stops by the winning driver, 6. I forgot to research where that was, and I meant to, and I can't remember off the top of my head.
Most in a single race?
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
I can't. I meant to look at that one because I saw this.
Is that going to be like a race that got red flagged? So like they count it as a pit stop? I mean, 6. I don't remember. Anyway, go on.
Most races left in a season after securing the championship, 6. And if you will, he had the most records in a season, I would assume, ever, with the exception of Farina in 1950. Other than that, I'm assuming he's got the most ever. The record for most records.
That's ridiculous.
It is. He, I mean, like, we have given Max a lot of praise. He deserves it. He was great. The RB19 was great, which also was feted in all the awards. The RB19, there were, like, people singing songs. I'm like, enough.
Do you think he thinks that there isn't as much to find in the RB20 and that the competition will close the gap? Because he's genuinely got a little bit emotional twice now about referring to not being able to drive that car again. Like, literally, live when he finished the season, he was a bit choked up as he looked at the car and was kind of like, you know, Michael Knight looking at never driving kit again. And even when he got his award, he kind of turned around and he made the same similar kind of reference. It was like, you know, he said, it hit me at the end of the final race where I kind of turned around and looked at this and thought, I'm never going to drive that car again. I'm like,
I think he's sandbagging. I think they started on the RB20 in August. I think they've been at it long ahead of anyone else. It's the only reason people even got close to him at the end of the year, because they were already on the RB20.
I predicted that they would dominate all the way through till the new regs.
Like, I know, you punk.
A year ago.
I know.
But you were always like, well, there'll be a law of diminishing returns. You can only get so much out of these regs.
I'm hoping I'm right.
The pack have to catch up. So that's why I just wondered. I think, you know, have they gone to Nui and said, what have you got for us for next year? And he's like, oh, a couple of tweaks. But to be honest, this was as near perfect as you can make these regs.
A cup holder and a new rear view mirror shape. I'm like, what else is there? Who knows? We'll find out. God, please don't let him lead 75% of the laps. Sorry. Did I say that out loud?
80% incoming.
Oh, geez. All right, so I found a stat on positions gained and positions lost, separate stats in 23. So effectively saying who gained the most positions, then who lost, held individually, and the highest.
What is this? Because I looked at this, right? Is this from qualifying position to final race position, not like overtake?
Starting
it's
the
not
race.
An overtake.
Correct. Starting the race, okay. Where you finished. And not overtakes. And so Checo gained 105 positions, by far the most. Lance, 63. And you could probably say it's because those guys qualified poorly and had good cars.
I'm thinking, so this is a stat that because he screwed the pooch so many times not making it out of Q1, but he was in a rocket ship.
Right.
He was naturally going to be well armed to make up for poor qualifying. So this is a who recovered the best in races after being rubbish in qualifying stat.
What was amazing to me was Max gained 42 positions in the year. I didn't know he'd started beyond second enough times to have tallied 42 spots to have gained, but
well,
he did.
That's why I was asking, where does this come from? So
yeah, he had a couple starts.
Races where he did charges from the back, so you've only got to do a couple.
He had one where he didn't make it into Q2, I remember, and so yeah, all of those add up. A couple here, a couple there, over 22 races add up pretty quickly. Logan had 41. Max had 42. Logan had 41. He's in the top half. That's pretty good. And I know, again, we could say it was bad quality like with Checo, but it's not like the Williams was a rocket ship, unless they were at Monza, basically. And the interesting part to me was the two of the lower number of positions gained were Charles and Carlos. So they obviously were better in quality than the race per se, race pace, I should say. But of them, they were right next to each other, 19 and 18. Charles only lost 15 spots on the year from when he went down in races, and Carlos lost 33. So anyway, I won't go into the net because, again, I think it's a quality to race delta in terms of quality pace, race pace. But I just thought it was fascinating to see the difference between the two. And then something that fantasy kind of brought out in us 2 years ago or 3 years ago was the idea of points per million. It was two years ago. How much does your driver cost versus how many points are you getting from them? And this is before this year's template came out and ruined a lot of fantasy. And it was really kind of neat to think about, you know, how much are they paying as a team in real life now, not fantasy, paying a driver for the points they get. And there was, I would say, basically three amazing bargains on the grid. Number one was Oscar Piastri at 48 points per million. So he basically had, he had 97 points, $2 million, 48 and a half points per million. Blew everybody away. Fernando Alonso, and again, these salary numbers are estimates. I don't know if we've ever seen the official numbers.
I was going to say, this is absolute garbage and can't take into account any sponsorship deals. There is no way that Fernando Alonso, the elder statesman of F1, is only on $5 million a year when you look at some of these others that are allegedly on, like Gasly's on five and Russell's on eight. It's like, no way Alonso is on five. Not a chance.
Again, so these are the numbers that we have.
This can only be base salary and not take any bonuses and sponsorship.
I
and
think
all that
it has, well, not sponsorship, but I do think it has some bonuses because I'm pretty sure Max's
then
numbers.
I'm sorry, this is classic Reddit.
Okay.
This is made up numbers.
Alonso, Stroll, then Perez were the next few. So I found those fascinating. And then, Rob, I'd love your thoughts on this one. The final power rankings. And so this one is where the Formula One has five journalists or people who cover F1 assessing after each Grand Prix a score. And we've talked about this in years prior, or I guess the year prior, 22. We didn't do much in 23. But if you look at this, the power rankings after race 22, it is an average of the whole season. So it's not just the items. Of course, Max was 9.1 average for the way the five panel jury kind of gave him a score, but there was no one in the eights. And number two was Lewis at a 7.8. And I know Lewis was third in the championship. I was surprised Lewis was next. Maybe just it felt like they weren't so great towards the end of the year and I'm having recency bias. I don't know.
Yeah, because I was looking at this and thinking, I mean, A, you know, experts throwing a number around. I mean, how scientific is that? But you looked at it and you were like, well, is this just really nothing burger? Because really, if you take a stand back and look at this, it's Max is head and shoulders above everybody else. Everybody else seems miles down, but fairly close to each other because some of them started the season strong and ended weak. Some of them started weak and ended strong. So you look at Piastri is down there. I was like, where's Piastri on this list?
Right.
Well, because they sucked at the beginning, so they wouldn't have got good rankings at the beginning.
But Lando's third.
Yeah, but again, the delta between them is 7.1 to 7.6.
That's true.
I'm having that as a nothing burger.
So basically, kind of just Max and then everybody else.
Basically, yeah.
Agreed. Totally agree. So then the last couple items here that I have before we get to your made-up items, which I can't wait to see.
Not made up.
Uh-huh. And so in 2023, we had a variety of people qualify on pole. We had Max. We had Charles, who had five. I think he had four on track and inherited one, if I'm doing the math right. Carlos had two. Lewis had one in Hungary, which I totally forgot about. And then Checo had a couple early in the year. If you remember, Checo came out on fire to start the first five races. And so I look at this and I'm like, all right, you know, familiar names, I'll say. We look at laps led. We've already hit this one where Max has 1,003 and the next closest is Sergio at about 150, just under. So again, Max dominated. We already talked about the count of 75%. But here we go. Podiums. We mentioned Max is 21. Interestingly, at the end of the year, some of those early season people still were there. Fernando was third with eight, right behind Checo's nine. Checo and nine podiums? He fell off so hard at the end of the year. If you told me, he would have had the second most podiums. I know he had the second most points, but it felt like everyone was infighting behind him. Nine podiums is a lot of podiums. I was surprised by that.
It's less than half of the races in the year. In a rocket ship, he made the podium.
Well, that's the other part. It's like you can do a thing for these. You can either make everybody look great or everybody look terrible.
But those stats do make Checo look terrible because when you compare the same car, Max gets 21 podiums to Checo's nine.
Yeah, but Fernando has eight podiums and Lance Stroll had zero.
Yeah, so a big delta is a good thing between teammates, but yeah.
Well, and I mean, the hard part is Lando had seven, and I know he had the upgrades one race earlier, but Oscar only had two. I know he's a rookie, and I know we love him. But then the last couple notes that I found interesting here were just in terms of reliability. Just to mention this, Max raced every lap the whole season, 100%, 1,325. That's insane to me. That's absolutely insane that his car, incidents, other drivers, he never missed a lap. I mean, that is
crazy.
That is absolutely bonkers.
It's, I don't see the point of almost counting it, as in, like, laps raced isn't really a stat, right? But through this stat does come that you're right. It's, you could just flip this and just count people's DNFs. That's right. Really what this does. This is just a numerical way almost of turning DNFs.
Zero
into
DNFs.
How many laps did that cost you not being able to race because you DNF'd? And you're right. Not only have you got the fact that the car never let him down, he never messed up, like, say, George pushing it and clipping the wall.
Right,
and,
in Singapore.
And crashing, right, in Singapore.
Yeah.
So he never did one of those. He also never got unlucky. Anybody driving into him ever did enough damage to take him out. The one in Vegas, was it Vegas?
Yeah,
where George closed the door without seeing him because he was driving Miss Daisy and going the wrong way. He, bad side pod damage, but seemed to make the car faster. So not only was Max absolutely amazing in an absolutely amazing car, but any particular moment where fate needed to deal a hand and decide whether or not an instant was going to take you out of a race, it never did. He never got caught up in anything.
Well,
he did. Anything that cost him laps.
To finish a race, right. Yep.
Yep.
So
yep.
My last two, no first-time winners in 23, which was a real bummer to not have seen that. We did have some first-time leaders. We talked about Yuki in Abu Dhabi. That was exciting. There are a few others. We only had one first-time podium, and it was Oscar, which he had in Japan in terms of the races themselves. I know there were sprints, but I'm just talking about the race. So, and I think he had a second after that, if I remember right. So anyway, I thought it was great. I want to see young talent in there with no first-time winners and only one first-time podium. I'm looking forward to the future to see some young drivers. I don't know if we'll see any in the second half of 24. We obviously won't see any in the beginning of 24. But
yeah,
see what the cars bring. You never know.
Yeah, so on to mine then. So come on, I didn't. These aren't made up. Here we go. I did get the laps led one, but not because I wanted to read out the 1003 stat again. It's actually to set people, see if you know it, and also maybe if you don't know it, ask listeners to get in touch. Because Oscar Piastri led one lap. So who are the drivers that led a lap this year? It's Max, it's Sergio, Carlos, Charles, Lando, Lewis, George, Yuki, Fernando. Three times, three laps Fernando led this year, and one for Oscar Piastri, right? I was like, what race did he lead a lap on? So then, okay, you've got your hand up. So I started Googling it, and everything that came back kept saying Spa. But then when I was reading Spa, that was the sprint, and this isn't a stat about sprints.
Oh, I thought it was. I was going to say Spa sprint, because I remember after the first lap, after Max pitted, and then he was out there.
Well, so maybe... So, are the 1003 including the sprints?
That's not my stat.
I thought they were Grand Prix laps, not sprint laps.
I think it was total laps.
If it's total laps and it includes the sprints, then that one has to be Spa for Oscar. But I thought he led more than that solitary lap. But
well, let's have people tell us what they know. I think it's Spa sprint is my guess, because I remember that.
Okay.
I do. And then when he came in and it all kind of fell apart. But he still finished second, right? Didn't he that race?
Yeah,
he finished
so.
Second in the sprint, if I remember. Anyway, so people, please correct us.
Didn't he win a sprint? Didn't Piastri
win
a sprint somewhere? So if he did, he has to have led more than... So this
has to be GP.
Can't include sprints,
Grand
right?
Prix.
So
must
therefore,
be.
I can't find which race it was where Oscar led the GP. So anyway, someone could... I'm sure someone will
You're right,
find
he did.
There,
didn't he win a sprint?
I thought he won a sprint.
And we made a joke, it's not a race?
Yes. Or maybe we're not. Maybe you got pole in it. I don't know. My brain is really playing tricks on me now. Anyway, let's get into some residual stats here.
Do it.
So what I found was from, where is it? Let me give credit. Planet F1, and it's average grid positions by driver versus their teammate, because Brian did either last week or sometime, we did the head-to-head. You know, the only good thing is, like, if you out-qualify your teammate, and we had some kind of like... what was it? Albon did 22-0 over Logan,
but he had been blanked by Max in 2019 or whatever it was. Yeah.
So I made the point of, but I wonder, does anybody know what the average position was? Because, okay, just because you out-qualify them, do you only out-qualify them by couple of positions or by a lot of positions? Because that's also a massive delta as well, right? So put those two stats together. They had them on separate places on Planet F1, so I just merged the two together. So we got our leader table of the biggest gaps by head-to-head and then the gap between them. So you've got Aston Martin, Fernando Alonso to Lance Stroll. As you'd pointed out, their head-to-head was like 19.3. Average position was 6.3rd on the grid versus 11.6th for Stroll. So the biggest gap between teammates in terms of not only did I out-qualify you, I actually finished, I actually got an average qualifying position
5.3 spots higher.
5.3 spots.
And that's
higher.
Net. That's net. Of
yeah,
the
yeah.
Whole
yeah.
Season?
It, okay. It's. I think it says. It says it's an average of every driver's final starting grid slot for each Grand Prix this season. No sprints, with any penalties applied, and pit lane starts are removed because if they broke, if there was a rule where you had to start from the pit lane, it kind of completely screwed all the stats. So they were like, no, we just want to look at like if they complete quali, where do they come out? Next up was Max and Sergio. So that was a 20-2 thrashing by Max, and it was a 5-gap difference. So Max was finishing 5 spots ahead of Sergio.
After qualifying, you just finished.
Yeah. Sorry, it's qualifying position.
Correct.
So it's
I can't believe Max's average grid position starting was only 3.18. That's how.
Yeah,
I expected
it
to be
a few
higher.
Races to bring it down, I guess. And then the one we just said was Alex was 22.0 over Sargeant, and he was on average 4.75 positions better off in quali. Then we get like a group here where they're the head to head is kind of very, very similar. So you've got McLaren, Alfa, and Ferrari are all pretty much 15-7 in terms of the drivers beating each other, right? So 15-7. Yeah. So Hülkenberg over Magnussen, he finished 3.3 spots in qualifying ahead of Magnussen. Lando 1.69 ahead of Oscar, Valtteri 1.6 ahead of Zhou, and Charles 0.8 ahead of Carlo. So this was like kind of the stat that I was on about, right? You've got four teams there,
right,
that have come out with almost the same head-to-head. So you'll say, oh, yeah, Charles beat Carlos 15-7.
But it was closer than it sounds like.
And closer than it sounds. So Nico to Kevin, he's done him by, on average, 3.3
I thought that was going to be Charles higher.
I was sure
Nico was going to be higher than three above Kevin because it felt like Nico always had quali pace that he found in that Haas,
yep.
And then you felt like Kevin had more of the race pace, but boy, I was closer than I thought.
And then you've got Merck just close. It was 11-11 in qualis, and the position difference was 0.36. Lewis was on average 0.3 ahead of George. I mean, you can't separate those two. That's ridiculous.
Fascinatingly enough, and this is off the top of my head, Lewis was third in the championship. Wasn't George eighth?
Yeah, well, this is quali, not race.
I know, I'm saying race results. Yeah. Now, I'm taking that through for two guys who quali basically in a photo finish for the season. To have a big delta in the championship was pretty interesting.
And then this one is the one that blew my mind. It's the only one on the grid. Esteban, where is it? So Gasly beat Ocon 14.8 in qualifying. Yet Ocon has a 0.24 higher average qualifying position than what? So that's the
Pierre had some really
one.
Bad outliers, basically.
Really bad outliers. Yeah. They were obviously really, really close every time they got beaten the other way around. But the one took a couple of times that he did beat him, it was by a long way.
I like that one. That was
and
good.
Then I left AlphaTauri to the end because it was just too hard to do this right. But
mess.
It was quite interesting that you had Danny Rick had an average grid position of 13.7, Liam Lawson 13.8, Yuki 13.82, and then 16.3 to Nick DeVries. So yeah, the three of them were all within like nothing of each other. And then Nick.
But he also, the car was worse in the beginning of the year. We know that. It improved. I think it was better by the time Liam got there, and it was better when Danny Rick closed the season. So I feel like I'll defend Nick a tiny bit on that one.
Yeah, true. Okay, so
here it comes. One. Everybody, pull up your chair right in front of the fire. Rob's inventing a statistic. Let's get the fire going.
So then I went to the next thing. So that's the quali head-to-head. What does race head-to-head look like? So I was going to do some stats about race head-to-head. I was like, well, what if I merge the two and say, if we look at the quali stat, How does a team finish head-to-head in quali, and how do they finish head-to-head in race? And I look at the delta between the two. So if you clawed some spots back, you know, what would it look like? I decided that that was like the swing in spots. Did you, if you lost your teammate in quali head-to-head but beat them in race head-to-head, that's amazing because you're pulling them back in, right? So I was like, okay. So Mercedes, the qualifying head-to-head between Lewis and George was 11-11 because they were dead heat.
Right.
Over the course of the season, Lewis won 15-6. So I put that down, and I know this doesn't quite make sense, but I put that down as a +9 swing because they were zero in the, there was no difference between them in quali. It was +9 by Lewis by the end of the season. So 15-6 is +9. So that's the biggest positive swing on our swingometer is Mercedes.
So, yeah, hold on. So according to the way you do this, Lewis has a +9, meaning the delta in quali, he's overcome it, even though it was zero, but he's overcome whatever it was 9 times.
Yes.
Okay. So it does not net. Well, keep going. I got questions.
It doesn't quite. This is where it's not the best stat in the world, but anyway, it was fun doing it.
Oh, no, no, don't say that in advance.
You got McLaren second, where you had 15-7 Lando to Oscar. So the delta in quali was 8, and then Lando won 17-5 in races head to head. So he extended that from 8 to 12. So he had a +4 swing. Lando extended over Oscar. Red Bull, 0. They were my control experiment. Max 20-2 over Sergio in qualifying. Did him in races 20-2. There's no swing. There's no movement. Oh,
I get what you're saying. Because he was already 20 ahead. I understand it now. I didn't understand this.
Well, the delta was 18, so the delta was +18, if you like, for Max.
Right, 18 ahead. Sorry, I meant 18.
And he was still 18 ahead.
But it was still 18 afterwards. So the net of
the swing is 0.
Oh, right.
Now, then you go the other way.
Hang on. How does that... You need a position in this, too. You need a position number on this, too, because you're telling me Max was 0 swing over Checo. I know that's technically your status, right? But you need a position o-meter in here as well.
Well, that you can do that if you want to do a position. I just wanted to look at... If the only way that me and you say you can judge teammates is on, because then the same machinery is head-to-head. You've got quali head-to-head, you've got race head-to-head, and this is my unique swing.
Okay, keep going. This is great. Okay. I'm all for it, but I just want to add a positional meter next to it.
You can do that. And then, okay. And that's it. That is the end of drivers that either went into races ahead of their teammate and extending it, or in Max's case, maintaining it. Everybody else, the other driver, clawed them back. So qualifying, Aston Martin, it's Fernando Alonso 19-3, so a 16 plus point over Lance. In the races, it's 17-4, so the delta now is 13, so it's a -3 to Alonso. He lost. He still beat Stroll overall, but he actually got that delta clawed back. Next, the -4 swing is Haas. Magnussen lost 7-15 to Nico, but only lost 9-13 in races, so we had a -4 swing. Ferrari, a -5. Charles was 15-7 over Carlos, finished 11-9. So we went from an 8 delta to a 3 delta. Alpha, Valtteri wiped the floor with Zhou in qualifying, 15-6, 9 delta. Races, 12-9. 12-9, so 3, so a -6 swing. Zhou really kind of clawed him back in. Alpine, that's what hurt my head. So Gasly beat Ocon 14-8, so had a +6 delta from quali. Lost in the season 10-9 to him, so man. It was a 6 to -1 swing, so it was a -7 swing overall. Williams, this is the one that just made me laugh, where I thought I'd messed up all my maths, right? Because I'm like... Alex trashed him 22-0, but because Logan actually managed to beat him on 3 occurrences, this is the way my double scoring kind of messes it up a little bit. So 18-3, Alex finishes the season, so that's a 22-15 swing, so it's the biggest delta. Logan, in theory, caught up the most, -8.
7.
7, whatever it was. Yeah. So, yeah, so...
And AlphaTauri was
nice. AlphaTauri was a little bit interesting because Yuki versus Nick was a 0. It was 2-8 in qualifying. It was 2-8, or 8-2 if you like, Yuki over Nick De Vries in qualifying a race. That was a dead heat. Yuki versus Danny was also a dead heat because it was 4-3 to Yuki in qualifying and 4-3 in races. Poor old, and then Yuki actually lost to Liam on here because we had... 3-2 to Yuki in qualifying, 3-1 to Liam in races. So there you are.
All right, I gotta say, I your quali stats, the first section that you covered, were great. Like the head-to-head, but then also the gap in, you know, quali finishing position. Loved it. Loved the tiers. It made sense. I learned from it. Kudos to you, Robert. I don't know if the swingometer is getting exactly what you want out of it. I would love people's thoughts. Please weigh in. It has potential. I'm not being a Debbie Downer. It has very real potential, but when I was trying to understand some of it, I got a little confused along the way.
Fine. Like any groundbreaking discovery, it takes a little while for people to get their head around it. It's not Benny Hill level. Don't start explaining the Benny Hill music.
I stopped it as fast as I could when you started saying something like that anyway. Yeah.
No, joking aside, it was interesting, though, to see kind of that evolution of quali head-to-head into... race head-to-head. There's definitely some drivers that can nail it on a Sunday. Right. I mean, really, kind of the stat kind of... People will often say that Charles is Mr. Saturday, right? And they were down there with one of the biggest negative swings from one driver to the other. Sainz performed much better on race weekend. He still lost to Charles overall on the season, but much less being beaten to death than he was through qualifying.
Well, so, I think we saw that even the 15-7 in Charles' favor, in reality, they started about the same place on the grid. Over the course of the season.
While
he may have lost, it was by the slimmest of margins and one of the slimmest overall between teammates. So I would say Mercedes and Ferrari have two drivers who are competing fair, regardless of the head-to-head in quali and whatever the hell the swingometer would have said, because I can't be bothered to go figure that out again. Ferrari and Mercedes have two drivers who performed fairly well in quali, but then we saw some delta after that. Interestingly in Carlos's favor and Lewis's favor, which I think we knew. So fascinating.
Yeah. So I think that kind of, that brings it to an end, doesn't it? There's the SAP stats edition. You got any more at your sleeves, or are we all statted out?
I'm all statted out.
Oof. So that's the second part of the trilogy done of our season review. I think next up we're going to try and get together with the Discord crew, but I'm not sure that'll be next week because we haven't even started thinking about organizing it yet. So we're not very good at pulling these things together quickly.
No, we're not. Well, work's been in the way and travel's been in the way, but we'll make it happen soon. And we find some dates and get all that planned. Yeah, it's okay. You know, Die Hard didn't have all their movies come out every year. They had a little gap in between where Bruce Willis went and did other things.
Exactly.
We'll be fine.
So we thought it was something to do next week.
100%. I thought this was fun, and I appreciated Rob's attempt to get into the stats game. You pretty good, man. Pretty good. Pretty soon we'll have to have some Vail stats.
Sky Sports F1 will be knocking on my door asking to buy the rights to the swingometer, I'm telling you.
Wouldn't bet on it. thanks everyone for listening to our 2023 stats review of the Formula One season. I had a blast kind of going through this, Rob. Thanks, man, for dialing in from Boston to do this, to make sure we could get the content out. Yeah.
I know you're trying to wrap up. I know you're in the middle of your goodbye thing, but you just mentioned me being in Boston and a stupid, stupid little observation that maybe I'm missing F1 a little bit too much. So as I'm driving up the interstate, I-90 for all you interstate fans out there, I got caught in a DRS train. Do you know what caused the DRS train?
I don't.
Right. And when I say it, you might understand, you'll be able to visualize it in your head, is that there were a number of cars that were maybe, let's say, going along a little bit more than the published speed limit.
As cars might do.
As cars may do. And then one spies in one's rearview mirror something known around these parts as the state trooper. So you'll start filing into the inside lane. And then eventually the state trooper makes his way through the pack, catches up with the lead car. The lead car now is in that awful position that they are overtaking legitimately a line of trucks. So they can't pull in and let the state trooper by. But they also don't want to go more than like 1 mile an hour over the speed limit. So they stick there at 65, 66 miles an hour, trying to overtake trucks that are probably only doing 64. So now you get like a line of 20 cars, and I'm about 15th in this line, all trying to inch past these trucks because the poor guy at the front is a bench. It's either a DRS train or it's a safety car. I don't know which one I want it to be. And then eventually we get past the trucks, the car pulls. Yeah, maybe safety car more rather than DRS, actually, because we finally get
limiting
past the
speed.
the little slow guy can actually pull in. State Trooper decides he's out of here, and it releases, and off he goes. And then the rest of us can go racing again.
So did the safety car eventually pull into the pits, and you guys got to take off?
Eventually, yeah, but then nobody wants to be the one. I mean, basically, the State Trooper is Max. He just disappears off into the distance and leaves the rest of us to fight over who can overtake the next truck the next.
I was coming back from Madison, and I had a Charger, not a Hellcat nor one of the larger ones, on overtaking me. And they slowed down and kind of gave me the eye as they looked at my car and then hit the gas. And I think it's the V6. And so I'm like, no, that's not going to work. I'm not going to allow that. So I did the undertake where I took them on the right side, which you're not really supposed to do. And then I looked at the speedometer and I realized I was doing too much and I had to back off. I'm like, if you want to take it, you can go for it, brother. But I think, I'd win this thing. So that was a little different situation, but I gave up before the checkered
flag. So what you basically did is you did a Michael Schumacher trying to construe a photo finish with Rubens, but you gave it too many beans and then had to ease off.
I backed off. All right, everyone, thanks for listening. We can't wait to talk to you again in a week's time. I hope you all have a wonderful week.